Welcome to another week on Let's Get Real with Coach Menachem Show, Sunday Nights. Originally a Zoom interactive platform where we discuss real life scenarios with real live people.
Shalom Aleichem, welcome everybody back. Tonight is, we're starting after Pesach. I want to call it season two. Baruch Hashem is going to give Gevaldik a year. We had a tremendous amount of shiurim and a tremendous amount of chizik. And Zoicha to start our 49th shiur tonight. And I want to thank everybody for, again, for coming every week and for mechazik doylem and for telling people about it. We're getting tremendous feedback, it's really doing mechazik thousands and thousands of people. So please, if you know about the shiur, come on, tell people about it. And we have a lot of upcoming things coming, which I'll tell you about it shortly. All those who are watching the replay, don't forget to click on the like button and subscribe to Coach Menachem so every week you can get the shiurim every week straight to you. I want to start first with thanking all the advertising sponsors for promoting us here in Lakewood, the Lakewood Scoop. Thank you to Rabbi Yaniv and Chazak. We really appreciate you for promoting us on Chazak. A special thank you to Chayla Kaufman and Shmuel Sommer, who's actually now in Eretz Yisrael also, for always promoting us across all the Jewish platforms. Next week, we're going to have a shiur with Rabbi Daniel Kalish from the Waterbury Yeshiva. We're going to be discussing just love our struggling teens and giving them chizik and teaching them how to flourish. It should be an amazing program. And it's actually a lot of the Waterbury parents put it together. They really wanted to come on to be mechazik, people that are dealing in that Indian. It should be a very powerful shiur next Sunday. So everybody, please try to come on. If you know somebody that could really benefit from it, please tell them about it. Another thing, Coach Menachem is collaborating with the OK Clarity. They deal with greater health and wellness in the Jewish community. OK Clarity is an online platform for mental health support in the Jewish community. Their online platform, you'll find therapists, coaches, nutritionists, engage, inform, and stay inspired. Links Menachem will send out after the show. Let's start out tonight with Coach Menachem Zoga Psicha.
Welcome back, everyone. After Pesach, I hope everyone ever had a good Yom Tov wherever they were. And everybody should have a gesunte Sommer. And yes, we're very excited to start our second year, Baruch Hashem, with a bang. And we're Baruch Hashem booked till the end of the summer. And yes, there was a little bit of a mistake in the dates. It says in March, but I'm sure you could figure that out. So tonight's topic, how to set boundaries in a world with no boundaries. So from the feedback that I got, I feel like if everybody would be unmuted, there would be a lot of noise over here. It would be very noisy, people jumping out of their seats, and everybody has what to say about this. And we've got from all different angles, some people saying it's not a new problem. There's nothing we can do. We need to be part of the society. Every generation has their standards. I'm just going to list a few. Every circle has their own challenges. Where do you draw the line? The kids will resent it. And all the events that the yeshivas do, you should see what it looks like. And the Rosh Yeshivas give COVID for people who have money and on and on and on. And I'm sure we'll hear a lot about it tonight. But before we start, I just want to mention that this week in Sefiras HaOmer, we're starting the week of Teferis. So the first week is Chesed, and the second is Gevura. But really what we have to try to figure out, the balance, the Teferis, Avada, there's Baruch Hashem, we live in America. Nobody's missing anything, but how to have the balance for us and for our kids, and to be able to not to be strong against the tide of the world and to be happy with what we have. And that's why Baruch Hashem we have tonight with us Rabbi Elephant, the Mitzvah Hashem will help us. I believe Rabbi Elephant has seen and heard from all spectrums and all different solutions that we need. So Mitzvah Hashem tonight we'll hear from Rabbi Elephant. Groisen Shkoyach.
Groisen Menachem, beautiful opening. Again, tonight's topic, I'm discussing how to set healthy boundaries for ourselves, for our children. It's a very big topic. A lot of people are very excited. People came over to me. They said this is a very big topic and we need a lot of dracha. Rabbi Elephant, I know, was a little bit into it, a bit passionate about it. So it's a schus to introduce Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Elephant. The floor is yours, Rabbi Elephant.
Shalom Aleichem and a guten Sommer and a guten Chodesh. It's good to be back here again on Coach Menachem and Parnas and Company. If the topic is so important for you guys, I think the next time we'll do it at 5 o'clock in the morning, your time, and maybe in the afternoon over here, if you're all really that interested. But I'm happy to see that the Olam came back even after Corona. When we did this last time, I thought that this was in place of the bowling alleys that were closed, and this was the local entertainment for presidential estates and their friends. But I see that Baruch Hashem, even after Corona, the Olam is still interested in their kids and be mechanech them. So maybe that's the only positive thing I'm going to say this evening. So we always want to start off with something positive and chiyuvi. But all jokes aside, if I say anything too extreme or radical, please attribute it to the fact that I didn't sleep tonight. So just delete anything else. Shalom Aleichem to everybody. And like I said last time, I think it's a Kiddush Hashem that so many hundreds and hundreds of Eden get together to try to, all of us together, try to better our lives, improve the quality of our lives and our children. I want to preface my words that the fact that I'm speaking about the topic doesn't mean in any way that I'm an expert on the topic. And I don't know if Parnas said, I hear from all spectrums and things like that. But we'll share together some thoughts that I've been thinking about the topic. I was just came back from a trip from your neighborhood, literally, before Pesach. I was there a couple of weeks. So I want to share with you some impressions, and maybe we can take it further. The topic of boundaries in Chinuch, one of the co-hosts asks me a few minutes ago, tell me, are you only going to speak about the kids and the boundaries in Chinuch, or maybe you'll speak about the parents getting some boundaries also? So the answer is we're only going to speak about the parents. The kids are just functions of our own boundaries, and the kids are just a telodah, derivative of who we are, what we are, how we define ourselves. Last time we spoke about in passing about many topics, about the importance of creating boundaries and limitations. We spoke then about a number of ideas. I want to go over them quickly and then move to the heart about what we want to speak about tonight. Last time we spoke about the idea of boundaries, obviously as a chinuch tool of creating human beings who know limitations. Obviously, we're not going to speak about that tonight. We spoke last time about parents creating boundaries for children as a tool of creating a house and a message that our children can identify with. That means, as I spoke last time, and in the house that we grew up, and I see my older brothers on the screen, so out in Florida, so he can attest to it, that the boundaries that we were brought up with, whether we appreciated them when we were children or not, but defined us and still define us till today. It gives us a sense of who we belong to, and we speak about it a lot. So we spoke last time that beyond the disciplinary role that boundaries play, they also play a critical role in helping children define who they are, what they belong to, what their parents' house is all about. And I said last time that a person has to always say to themselves and look at themselves in the mirror and say, what message am I giving over to my children? What do I believe in? What's important? And when we want to give over a message to our children of what we believe in and what's important, so boundaries play a critical role in that. That means boundaries is not a negativity. Boundaries is a border where I am, where we are, where the rest of the world is. And that sense of what our house is about, and that sense of what our family is about, is practically articulated by the boundaries that we make and define of where we belong and where the rest of the world is. It's critical for a child's identity. It's critical. So that's the second role that boundaries plays. It's a clear definition of what every house is about, what we believe in, what our flag is. It's not enough just to talk at the Shabbos table about ideas if they're not implemented in any way. We spoke last time also about a third critical role that boundaries plays, that in general, parents who are not able to make boundaries are not able to say no, if we'll use a negative term, chas v'shalom, they're really sending a message to their kids that they're weak. And the child knows, not even subconsciously, that in a moment of need and a moment of distress, they can't rely on their parents because their parents are weak people. And that subconscious knowledge that my parents never know how to draw, they know how to draw a line, and they never know how to say no, they don't even know how to stand up to a child. It registers by the kid and by the children, okay? It registers by them that Tati and Mommy don't have a backbone and don't have a spine, and they know that if they can't stand up to some minor pressure from some 9, 10, 13, 14-year-old who wants something, so it registers by the child that these are people who don't have a spine, who can't stand up to any sort of pressure in life, because as much as we think that a teenager, just for argument's sake, pressure is something very powerful, there are greater tsaros in life and greater difficulties in life than that. And it registers by a child that if my parent can't stand up to my pressures, it registers by the kid that these people are weaklings and I can't rely on them. The loss of the anchor of parents, we'll say it in a positive way, the anchor that a child receives from having parents that are strong, that he knows that they are the rock that they can rely on, is a critical, critical, critical contributing factor to a child's emotional security. So when we're constantly giving into the kids just because of weakness, I'm not talking about because of ideology. We're going to get to ideology in a minute. That's what I want to talk about tonight. But when we're constantly giving into our kids, we're radiating to them weakness. And the kid knows that on my parents, I can't rely because they're weak people. And that takes away a very, very powerful anchor and platform, which allows children to thrive and to grow. So those are three things that I think we spoke about last time. I think it's a good chazara. And if we would speak about this every week, we wouldn't need to do anything else. But I'm not sure your sponsors would appreciate that, whatever they're sponsoring, whoever they're sponsoring. So again, those are three things. That's in general discipline. That's in general who do we belong to? And that's weakness versus strength. I want to speak tonight about two other topics, which are critical to the topic of boundaries, and they're really the hashkafic and musr and chinuch foundations of this topic. Both of them are not pleasant to your ears. And I'm saying this after a number of weeks in America, I have to tell you the truth that I'm going to be saying the watered down version of what I wanted to say tonight because my Rebbeim told me to speak positive. So I'm going to say the watered down version of what I really want to say. V'day l'chakima b'remiza. Everybody else will figure out and understand what I'm saying. I remind you, what I'm going to say is the watered down version. I was in America now for a couple of weeks and a couple of weeks ago for about 10 days. And look, this is the way it looks to me. I think that a large proportion of the tzibur that I'm speaking to, the foundations are shaking. So you'll ask me, what do you mean the foundations are shaking? The shuls are full, Baruch Hashem back again. The schools are full, Baruch Hashem back again for that. The things are thriving. The Dayan's back at work. I even heard there's a couple of people making money. There's even more people than that spending. And Baruch Hashem, we're back to normal. We got this corona thing out of our heads. And the vaccination thing is finally kicking in. Dayan's are b'shata, let's go back and party. That's the atmosphere that I saw in my visit I want to talk about two major distortions to chinuch, to our children, that that we're going to pay for in the coming years if we don't fix them. Number one, why is it so important, boundaries? So everything I said till now is true, but there's something much deeper and much more important. Mesil Sesharim starts off his sefer, Yisoid HaChassidus V'Sherish HaAvoida, the foundation of all saintliness, is the understanding that a person came into this world to go to Elam Haba. As Mesil Sesharim says, this world is a prosdar, it's a corridor. It's very interesting. Mesil Sesharim says that's the Yisoid. I want to use the metaphor of Mesil Sesharim and go with it all the way. A foundation of a building is not seen. It's under the ground. It's not part of the structure itself. And actually, in the utilization of the space, it plays no role. But everyone understands that the depth, the strength of the foundation contributes to two factors, which are one. One is the general stability of the building. If there's going to come an earthquake or any sort of tremor, it's going to be dependent on how strong the foundation is. But more so, the height of the building is directly dependent on the foundation, how strong it is, how much it can hold. So the foundation plays a role both in the stability and in the weight that the building is able to carry and how high one can build it. Mesil Sesharim says that the yesoid of Yiddishkeit, the yesoid of Avodas Hashem, is that this world is a prosdar. He doesn't say the Yisoid is davening. He doesn't say the Yisoid is learning. He doesn't say Yisoid is giving staka. Like one person told me in Lakewood, he says, oh, the Mesil Sesharim says that Ashiros, financial stability is an Yisoid, I'll give staka. That's not what the Yisoid of Ashiros is. Mesil Sesharim says that the Yisoid of money, quote unquote, is that a person forgets that there's a Kadosh Baruch Hu, he forgets that there's an Eibishter, that's the Nisayin. Not such an easy Nisayin, very easy to forget a Kadosh Baruch Hu. The Yisoid of everything that we are about is, the Yisoid is that this world's a prosdar. This world's a corridor. We're not here for this world, we're here for Elam Haba. That's the Yisoid, that's the foundation. And if that foundation is strong, a person can build a Klal Yisrael on it. A person can build an edifice, a person can build a skyscraper in Ruchnius and Gashmius. And if that Yisoid of that foundation is weak, then we're not stable as a society. We're not stable and we can't build to heights. So if that Yisoid, that foundation of the temporary nature of Olam Hazeh is weak, so there are going to be two results. And here I say, Dai Lechakima Bermiza. Our co-hosts tonight always like to advertise next week's speaker. Now, the great Goyin and Tzaddik, Rabbi Kalish, who's going to be speaking next week about struggling teens, is a direct result of what I'm talking about tonight. And I won't say more than Dai Lechakima Bermiza. But if our Yisoid, if our foundation is going to be weak, the fundamental Yisoid, I'm not talking about, by the way, anti-Gashmias, okay? I'm talking about if our fundamental Yisoid of our understanding that this world is not the Ikra is going to be weak. So first of all, when you have a weak foundation, you can't build more than a two-story house. So we're educating our next door to mediocrity, okay? You can't build more than a two-story house on a weak foundation. You can't build more than three stories. It's just going to collapse. So if we want to build, you know, greatness is a cliche. If we want to build anything substantial in Yiddishkeit as a community, Doiris, generation, the things that our parents and grandparents killed themselves for, literally and metaphorically, okay? And metaphysically, literally. Literally. Then there has to be a foundation, right? What is the foundation? The foundation is Yisoid HaChassidus V'Sherish HaAvodah Sheis Barvitz. It's all the Matkov also by Lama. What are we here for, okay? So if the foundation is going to be weak, so we're going to have two derivatives. We're going to have two results. One result is that we're not going to be able to build a skyscraper. We're going to build a little two-family. So we're going to have mediocrity in the next generation. I already identify some mediocrity now already. Second of all, we're not going to be stable as a community. We're going to shake. And every tremor and every earthquake that's going to come our way, every time there's going to be a volcano in Hawaii, it's going to affect us in Lakewood and in Flatbush and in Muncie and in Five Towns, because the Yesod, the foundation's weak. It's not earthquake proof. So the connection between this week and next week, I didn't know who was speaking next week. It's an honor to be week after week with the Goyin and Tzaddik Rabbi Kalish. But the connection is that if our Yesod, if our foundation is going to be weak, the foundation of that Olam Hazeh is not the Iker. Okay, I didn't Chas V'Shalom say that it's tuffel. We don't want to do anything extreme, even though it's 5 o'clock in the morning in Yerushalayim, but I won't say something so extreme that it's, but it's not the Iker, okay? So if the foundation is weak, the binyan, the whole edifice is going to be A, weak, and we're not going to be able to build much of a building. So we're going to build mediocrity and we're going to build instability. The most important role in all the dairis that, I'm going to say something very, very simple that we're forgetting. You know why boundaries are so critical in a Jew's world? I'm not going to say in our door, from Matan Torah. You know why boundaries are so important? Because when we don't make boundaries to our children, we're sending them a message that Olam Hazeh is the Iker. If a child has to have everything that we need, and like I told my partners before, and why do we have to talk about the children? Let's talk about the adults. If the adults need to have everything that they want, and we radiate that concept to the children, so we're sending a message that Olam Hazeh is the Iker. Now that subtle distortion in Hashkafa, I say Hashkafa. That subtle distortion of, is this world a prosdar? Is this world just a corridor? Or is this world the Iker, just as a place that we do mitzvahs and throw a bone to God? We learn, we give tzedakah, we do mitzvahs, we buy fancy esrogim, the best matzahs, the best schools for our kids, but this world's the Iker. When we don't make boundaries for our kids and for ourselves, we're sending a message to our kids and ourselves that this world's the Iker. Think about it. Stop for a second. Close your eyes. Tell me. I'm looking at 849. 849 came in late. I don't know who it is. But I'm looking at 848 people over here. I'm asking all of you, close your eyes. Many of you I know. How many of us have given our children a message in the way we live, in the world we live, in the neighborhood we live, that Olam Hazeh is a tuffel? Very simple. Close your eyes and ask a question. Have we succeeded in giving over to our children a message? By the way, and I didn't say you shouldn't go on vacation, and I didn't say you shouldn't have a normal life. I said, how many of us have succeeded in giving over to our children a message that this world is temporary? That this world's a corridor, this world's a hecha timtza to get somewhere. It's not the ikur shebi karim if you have to have every pitchifka. Have we succeeded in doing that? Or have we succeeded in creating a very, very rich, I mean, rich in ruchnius Yiddishkeit, with a lot of learning and a lot of mitzvahs and a lot of avodas Hashem? And you know something? We can pat ourselves on the back for that. We take the hard road. We spend fortunes of money on these things, fortunes of effort. But we're giving a message, or we're not giving over the message of the Iker. How many of us have given over to our children the fundamental? So if you think about it, your parents and grandparents, when they made boundaries for you, what they were sending you was a fundamental subconscious message that you're allowed to say no, because it's not the end of the world. And why is it not the end of the world? Because this world's not the Iker. So I'm talking about a very, very deep message. Is this world a prosdar or not? When we don't make boundaries and we don't make limitations, so we're sending a message to our kids that I can't manage without it. That means vice versa. It must be that this is where the buck stops here. This is where it's at. So because we have a lack of boundaries, we're suffering from a lack of boundaries. I can tell you that the greatest impression that I have from my trip to America, I have not been in America for a fully exposed trip to the Tzibor for 2 years is that, I'll say it in not an extreme way, otherwise they're never gonna invite me back again. And you guys are off track. Like something's gone off track, Rabbi Yisai. And I don't mean anybody personally here. As a Tzibor, we're off track. And we're not giving over to our kids this message that the Ikar is Olam Haba, the Ikar is the next world. This world's only a corridor. So you're allowed to say no. You're able to say no. You must say no. Because you need to give over that fundamental message to ourselves and to our children and to our community. This is the Yisoy. This is the foundation of afterwards comes the Heroes and Zrizos and Prishos and Kedusha and everything. Everything else that in the ladder of the Mesilas Hashom, all the Avoida, Chasidus, Shayush Havoida, all that only comes afterwards you have this foundation. And if you don't have foundation, so everything you do is built on a weak foundation, on a shaky foundation. And we're going to see mediocrity and we're going to see instability. And we're starting to see it already now. That's what next week's speaker is about. So the first and primary reason why I'm pleading with you as a community, we need to reinforce serious boundaries in the way we live and the way we bring up our kids is first of all, because by not doing them, we're inculcating our kids that this world is the final stop and everything that goes on over here is important and everything goes on over here is critical and everything that goes on over here has meaning. And the Yisoy, the foundation is shaky. Number one. Number two, just as important. And obviously the two things are interrelated. When we don't make boundaries for our children and we're not able to say no, I'll give you a very, very primitive mashal, okay? You know, a number of people told me when on my trip to America now that, you think that a kiddush today on Shabbos means you give a piece of herring, kugel, and cholent? That's not a kiddush. That's not even somebody who's a pauper makes a kiddush like that. Today, a kiddush in a development, I won't say in which city, which has developments, but a kiddush in a development that's not a super yeshivish place, cost $5,000, because without cutting boards, I never saw such a thing, but they say there's such a thing. It seems that the Elam here knows what it is. And without sushi and without expensive whiskey, you can't make a kiddush. People can't afford to make kiddushes anymore. I heard that from so many people, so I thought people were exaggerating. And so I went and checked, you know, when I was growing up in Bar Park, when we were growing up in Bar Park, so the very, very, very big gvirim gave cholent at kiddush. That was like a call, the big kiddush. You knew that, you know, if the gvir made a kiddush, so there was cholent. Okay. And today people literally, and I heard lines like, what do you mean? It's pasminish. I can't make a kiddush for just with kugel and cholent and kishka and herring. That's it's not even for poverty-stricken people. So watch. So if you're going to walk out of tonight's gathering and say, so your friend will say, so what the elephant say? He said, no cutting boards at kiddushes. Okay. I'm going to explain something else, what I'm saying. When a guy says, I can't make a kiddush that doesn't have A, B, and C, what he's saying is, I define myself by the type of kiddush that I make. That's what defines me. That's what ich bin ich. I was once talking to one of my rabbis many years ago, and I said that somebody's worth $1 million. So he told me, du redest wie Amerikaner. You're talking like an American. You define people by how much they're worth. What they're worth is by the financial thing. So people now are defined by what they give at a kiddush. When we don't make boundaries, Rabbi Yisai, we're sending a message to our kids. Why can't we make boundaries? Because what are other people going to say? So besides all the other problems, let's talk about the heart. What message are we sending to their kids? We're sending to message our kids that I measure myself and I define myself by a slice of dried meat that I give in some overstuffed development in Lakewood at a Kiddush morning. That's how we define ourselves. That's our measuring rod. That's how that's what gives us a sense of value, because I can't do different. So the children absorb that the things that we consider important, the things that we define ourselves by, the things that give us status, the things that give us meaning, the things that give us importance, the things that give us chashivas, are the lack of boundaries. Because if I make boundaries, it means I'm not worth anything. I've heard this echoed over and over and over again. So when we have a society that's losing boundaries, I don't want to say a society without boundaries, but when we have a society that's losing boundaries, we're sending our kids message number one, that the yesod, the foundation, the fundamental yesod upon which all our Yiddishkeit lies, that this world's only a prosdar, is non-existent. And second of all, we're sending a message to our kids in our own ability to make boundaries, because we're just following what everybody else does, even though we can't afford it, even though it's absurd, even though it's ridiculous. We're sending a message. That's how we define ourselves. So how do we expect our kids to have self-confidence? How do we expect our kids to have their own sense of zich? And then when our kids come home complaining about this one has this and this one has that, so people, it's not a chinuch issue of educating our children to self-control. It's a chinuch issue of educating ourselves to our fundamental sense of self-worth. When a guy says, I can't make a kiddush like that, I'm using the kiddush as a metaphor, if you don't mind, okay? And the daylech hakim of Beremiza, because you know, Rabbi said, we're not talking about kiddushim, okay? When a person, there's somebody who's wrote me a note just now. I live in Lakewood. Kiddush is grape juice and cake and herring. I didn't get the rest of the message. He flashed it off too quickly. But there's no question about it that the issue is not about Lakewood. And there are certainly neighbors in Lakewood where you could have a kiddush with herring, a kichel, and grape juice. Yes, that's true. You might have to go out of the Eruv from one neighbor to another to get it. There are certainly places like that. Of course there are, but there are too many places not. And again, we're not talking, the topic wasn't about the menu at a kiddush in a certain neighborhood. I think the mushal that I'm saying is a question of how we value ourselves, how we measure ourselves, what's our measuring rod for success, and what's our measuring rod for feeling good about ourselves, and what's our measuring rod for how we perceive that we've succeeded. And what we allow ourselves to be, what we don't allow ourselves to be. Okay, those are the two reasons why I want to speak about tonight, about boundaries. We need to make boundaries, because without boundaries, we're sending our kids a subliminal message that this world's the ikker. We are pulling out the rug, the carpet from underneath all of our Yiddishkeit, all of our Avodas Hashem, all of our chinuch, if we don't reinstate the primacy of this message. So the ball game's over, Rabbi. You say, if we don't take this back, if we don't take this territory back of that this world, and if you have to ask yourselves in your family, in the neighborhood you live, in the society you live, is that the message that this world is only a passing phenomenon? Everything we daven on, Mashiach, Achaka le'b'chol yom she'yavoi, everything is all based on the fact that it's only a corridor. Is our day-to-day lifestyle contributing to that belief? And second of all, is the lack of boundaries or boundaries that we put in, when our kids see us, how do they see us? What gives us a sense of self-worth? What gives us a sense of status in society? What gives us a sense of who we are, of self-worth? And if the kids will understand that what gives us our sense of self-worth, I'm not talking about how much gashmis we take or not, but our fundamental sense of self-worth, that's a game changer for us. So now comes the obvious question, and with that I'll end. And that is, we'll take some questions then. The obvious question is, can we do anything, or you just heard a shmooze and everyone's gonna come home depressed afterwards and end the story? And then Rabbi Kalish, who's an extremely positive person, will probably come back next week and tell you all that you're all great and everything's fine. So that's an option. I think that there are two things. One is as a prat and one is as a call. As a prat, everybody in their house can do a much better job in this area, both in giving over the message of what we're here for in this world, and yes, by making limitations on a private level, not to be afraid to make boundaries and not to be afraid to say no, to say yes. Sometimes a boundary could be yes, you know? Sometimes a boundary is a boundary. Not to be afraid on a private level. Kids are not gonna go off the derech so quickly. They're gonna go off the derech a lot quicker from the abundance of lack of boundaries than from the boundaries, I can assure you of that. So on a private level, not to be afraid to make boundaries, to make limitations, not to be afraid. Nothing will happen. The kids will be happier people, calmer people, more Yiddishkeit. Second of all, on a klal level, there's almost 1,000 people on over here, right? So every one of the 1,000 people here has 10 people you know, at least. So you know 20 people. Every person here knows 100 people. Reach out to 100,000 people and make a Kabbalah to go back to making a Kiddush with Kogel in all neighborhoods of Lakewood, Muncie, 5,000. I would love to see 5,000 people send in and I'm using this as a metaphor, don't get stuck with the Kiddushes, and I apologize to all the caterers. There'll be some sort of stimulus package maybe for them after tonight's, even though I'm not that worried. You know, 1,000 people are listening tonight. Each of you know 50 people. Okay, so reach out to 50 people that you know to sign on to Coach Menachem's Kiddush. And the Kiddush is just a metaphor for everything else. If you notice, I didn't say anything about Orlando, okay? I didn't say a word. I did not say a word about Orlando. Ir ve'em bi Yisrael, she'ibona beis ha'migdash m'hei revi'amenu. I wonder where the Orlando is going to be after Mashiach comes. I didn't say a word about Orlando because we're not talking about Orlando tonight.
Well, we have a bunch of questions about Orlando, Rabbi Elfin. Don't worry. We'll get there.
Nobody invited me there, so I have an igias. The
Shir is based out of Orlando. You know, we're in Orlando.
I'm aware of that. Yeah, most of the people here just they have these. That's why they Zoom made these fake backgrounds. I also have one. You don't know where I am. This forum thing is just what it's called. On a prat, I think that we can all do a much better job making boundaries at home. I think on a klal, I think that all of you together as a kehila should sign up together, let Coach Menachem and Rabbi Parnas pick up the challenge and send out how many people are prepared to make a serious commitment to lower the lifestyle that has gone through the roof in our world, through the roof. It's partially embarrassing. I came back from the United States after tens and tens of trips. I came back, you should just know that I am telling you as an outsider, an observer, like it was said in the introductory words tonight, I came back very, very troubled. I'm very worried about you. Why you? Because you are my world. You are my community. You are the people that I grew up with. You are the people that I teach. I'm very worried about you. I'm very worried about your children. I'm very worried about as a future, as a kehila. I think the foundations are very shaky. I think your sense of self-worth is tottering. And I think that as a community, why don't 5,000 people tonight commit themselves to making a normal Kiddush and going back to normal lives? And again, the Kiddush is a metaphor. We're not talking about Kugel and Cholent tonight. I wouldn't lower myself to speak about that. But it's a metaphor for hundreds of other areas of our lives that have gone out of control. Why don't in every development, every neighborhood, in every shul, get together 50 people in every city in the parts of America that's lacking boundaries and make a Kabbalah to lower the standard of living, whether it's in dress, whether it's in standards of house, whether it's in standards of simchas, whether it's in standards of how many times our children go out to eat and how they live and where they go. We'll all be a step quicker to Binyan Beis HaMikdash and Bias HaMashiach M'Heir V'Yameinu.
Rabbi Elephant, wow. Oh, let's digest that for a minute. Okay, let's take a poll just to get oil into it. Again, we have discussed to have Rabbi Elephant here live from Eretz Yisrael. It was a very powerful opening. We have tons of questions. Let's start with the polls, everybody. Rabbi Elephant can take a break for a minute, take a drink. Let's ask the oil in the questions. Well, don't forget, we wrote these questions before we had the share, so we're going to touch them up. Do you feel you're able to set boundaries in your personal life? So are you, as a person, able to set boundaries like Rabbi Elfin said, your own kedushim, your own personal gashmis lifestyle? Yes, no, I don't know what healthy boundaries are. Those are the three options. The second question is focused more on children. As parents, do you feel you are in control of your children? Option B, the children are in control of you. Or option C, depending on the day, who's in control of who? Let's answer those two questions, and then we'll get into some live questions. We have a few live ones, Rabbi Elfin, and we'll take it from there. Okay, let's share the poll with everybody. 1 second. 5, 4, 3, 2.
Are there any mail ballots?
Are there any what?
Are there any mail ballots?
They're gonna come probably right after the election. Okay, let's share the results. Okay, so do you feel you're able to set boundaries in life? Rabbi Elfin, 85% of the people here feel that they could. So they feel they have the yichelus too.
I agree, they could. You didn't ask them, do they?
Right, they have the yichelus, they have the keli. They have to make it.
Absolutely.
And 8% feel they can't, 7% don't know what boundaries are. And then as parents, 42% of people feel you're in control of the children, 7% feel the children are in control of them, and 51%, most people feel that depending on the day, sometimes...
Isn't that incredible? Isn't poll number two an incredible statistic?
It seems like something...
Only 42% answer that they feel in control of their children. Isn't that a CAT scan of our matziv? That's incredible, incredible statistic.
Okay, so let's start off with the first question tonight. And we'll take it from there. Okay, all the live questions will wait. We'll try to get through a few, and then we'll take some live. My kids are constantly needing things on a very demanding level, much more excessive than my husband and I live. They're on the next level. They see from our friends, the kids in school, their needs and even demands are constant. What is the best way to respond to them when they keep on coming to us for more and more stuff?
First of all, I'm sorry to disappoint you all. I know that this question is going to be repeated many times. There isn't a simple solution to this question, by the way, okay? In other words, the solution to this question, which is, by the way, on my trip to America, I heard it tens, if not hundreds of times, so it's a fantastic question. The answer to this question, first of all, there is no answer to the question. Let's repeat the question. My child is asking excessively for things because all his friends have and all his... So the answer to this is a combination of three parts, okay? There is no answer. We're talking about, I want to stress something, that every child in every house is a different variable, and every child in every house has a different equation. The moving parts of the answer to this question, and there's no solution to the question, but I'll define the parts to the answer. The answer to this question is based on A, without question, we can do a better job in making boundaries inside the house. That means even if there are pressures from the kids, we can certainly do a better job making limitations. That's one part of the variable, okay? In other words, there's no magic answer to the kids. The answer is you could say no sometimes, nothing will happen. Not to be afraid of the kids. Part number two in this variable is to have that relationship with the children, the investment in time and emotional connection, which allows you the depth to say no. Okay. And third of all, to collectively get together with parents of children. I keep saying this, maybe I'm naive and maybe it's impossible to do. If it's impossible to do so, then it's impossible to do. You know, we're in Galus 2000 years. This will be one of the things that hopefully Mashiach will solve. To collectively try to gather together a group of parents or members of a shul, of a neighborhood, of a development, and try to collectively get together, make a meeting in your house and lower the standards of the world around us, whether it's in a unit of a family or a unit of a shul neighborhood. I'm saying again three things. I want to stress this. The first thing is, I'm changing the order, is to be able to have the warm, loving connection with a child. Now, it doesn't work with every child. There are children who are difficult. There are houses which have different circumstances. That's why I'm saying a very general answer. Every situation is different and has to be judged separately. But in general, there are three variables to answer this question. Variable number one is, and the most important one is, you will not be able to make boundaries for your children. You will not be able to discipline your children without creating that warm, loving, invested relationship of time and effort and concentration into your children. There has to be a trade-off. You can't say no to the kids, detach them from what's going on in the street and society around them, and then say no. So number one the answer in general to this question, and a lot of these questions, is the ability to invest and give to your kids, that there's a trade-off. There's something that supplements what they're getting on the street. Number two is the etzem ability to say no. Number three, which is the weak link, is it possible for us to in any way change society? Number four is that if the children would see that we ourselves make better boundaries as a society, we lower the standards, we go back to some sort of normalcy instead of it skyrocketing the other way, of what the standards are, of what it has to be. When people, our children, listen to us talking in the kitchen of what's important in a shidduch, is it important how the people live, what type of china they serve on Shabbos, or all the other things which have started to take up importance, our children by osmosis will absorb what's important, what's not. Those are four general rules which apply. There is no specific or magic trick to any of these questions. But if we would combine having a much richer, happier houses, loving houses, simcha dikka houses, that would enormously empower our ability to say no. Nobody's going anywhere when it's a gishmaka happy house. A parent who has a good, happy, gishmaka simcha dikka relationship with a kid has the depth. He has enough money, quote unquote, in the account that he can say no, and nothing, he or she can say no. It won't happen. And if you'll say no, nothing will happen. You can explain to the kid that we don't do everything. Not only, there's a thing called hashkafa, there's a thing called Olam Hazeh. The previous daras knew how to give it over to the kids. And third of all, to try, again, as a group, there's a lot of people of it. There's 1,000 people here. As a group, everybody in their community, to make a concentrated effort to lower the standards. Things have gotten off track. Those are the three tools which we have. There's no magic here and say, what do I do when my kid is at 4 o'clock in the afternoon saying X, Y, and Z? It's a combination of these three factors to answer such a question.
The next question that came in, I think a lot of people listening to tonight, is they understand the concepts, and the adults are ready to work on it. Many are working on it. But like you're saying, it doesn't go overnight. Meanwhile, the kids are needing. So while the parents are maybe trying to figure out the shalom bayis, the simcha, the relationship, which is huge, based on what we heard in all these programs till now, that all of these, one by one, is avoda. And for those who are going for help, trying to figure out, making it better, but the kids don't have time. And they're like, the kids need all the stuff while the parents are working on it. How do we balance?
So there's two answers. There's one answer, which is, no, I don't come from a world where everything has solutions. And I'll say it in a positive way, that your question, okay, and the way it's being asked, is a major, major motivation to take care of things before you get into this mess. Right? So in other words, like, don't wait till your kids are 13, 14 year olds and you have this pressure on your head to fix the quality of a marriage. And don't wait till your kids are 13 and 14 and 15 and pressuring you to buy everything and go everywhere in order to invest in them and have the depth. You know that people who have good shalom bayis, happy houses, and are invested in their kids have enormous depth in making boundaries with their kids. I didn't say you always say no, and I didn't propose that. I'm not a proponent of that at all. And we have to give our kids, and we have to be flexible. And yes, there are social pressures of everybody in the class. You always have to go check, by the way, just as a side note, whether everybody really has, or it's really only 5 out of 25. Because 5 out of 25, or 7 out of 25, is still not roiv, not halachically and not economically in any way, okay? But the amount of leverage that a happy, warm, loving house based on good shalom bayis and good relationships in the kids and the siblings, the amount of leverage that it gives parents is huge. So first of all, don't wake up when you're a teenager to fix the quality of your life. Do it now, okay? And second of all, the answer to your question is that it's not all or nothing, okay? It's not all or nothing. In other words, it's not a clap on the beam and say, okay, we're pushing off education until we have a good marriage. It's true that homes which are weaker in that area are going to be much more challenged in saying no to children due to the awesome pressures of society. I say awesome, by the way, because what I heard in my trip now was awesome. But having said that, it's not all or nothing. There is room to, again, see, if we're talking about a behavioral issue, so then the question is correct. It's very hard to implement serious limitations. I want to say something a little bit deep, okay? if we were talking tonight about behavioral issues, we were talking about really creating real discipline and real limitation. So the question is right, because if I'm only beginning to work on these things when my kid hit 10th or 11th grade, my child, you're right, there isn't that much to do. Okay, you're boxed in. But if we're talking about sending tonight's topic, the way I see it, is sending a subconscious message that we're allowed to say no because this world's not the final stop, that a person can do even though he hasn't, okay, reached, he or she, by the way, when I say he, we're talking about both genders, both parents, when the parents have not reached that place yet, which we're talking about tonight, okay, but that message can still go over that I don't define, we don't define ourselves by gashmias, dicker things, and that this world's not the final stop. That message could go over. It's not all or nothing of that. On discipline, it's very hard to discipline when you don't have this platform that we're talking about. But the messages that we're talking about, which is the heart of Yiddishkeit, it's the heart of Avodas Hashem, it's the heart of who we are, that's something which is very not mortgaged to the topic of all or nothing.
Ralph, when the question came in, it's a little bit the other angle, so I want to ask it. The person writes a question. I had a very large family, and all the years I was moist and effish to live a very simple life, very little gashmis. We did minimals to teach our kids this. As the kids got older, they got very resentful because of that, and they actually backfired, and they're out of control with the way they spend, and they use it against me. Just bring out that point of view. What does Rabbi Elephant feel about that?
What did it feel? They obviously made a mistake, okay? Because I don't know who the people are, and I don't want to make anybody feel bad, but if we're talking about giving advice to other people, a person has to be in touch with the fundamental needs of our children. You see, this line is a very delicate line.
I want to mention, see, this is the fine line on it, what I wanted to get to, is if somebody sends his kid to yeshiva where 25 out of the 30 boys are all wearing very expensive clothing, and they're all going to the most expensive trips, and they all went to Orlando.
By the way, it's not 25 out of 30. I've done a survey on the 25 out of 30. 25 out of 30 equals 13 out of 35. You should know that. You should just know, by the way, it's one of the great lies. It's not 25 out of 30. The word everybody doesn't mean it's not everybody, and all is not all. It's not 25. I'm sorry to correct you. I don't want to interrupt you, Chas Hashem, be rude. It's not 25 out of 30, by the way. It's really not 25 out of 30. We have this illusion. It's not everyone. No, it's less. It's not everyone. It's not 25 out of 30. It's much, much less. And part of the parents, and I didn't speak about it tonight, not having the koichas to deal with the kids is not even checking that it's not everyone, it's not 25 out of 30, okay? So the answer is 100%, by the way, that you can't live over simply. You for sure, I think you all listened carefully, I didn't say anything about living a low standard of gashmias. If you medayik in what I said and understood, I didn't speak about cutting down dramatically or living a life of Spartan, who knows what, okay? And I didn't speak about Orlando, if you noticed, okay? We spoke about the fact that things have gone skyrocketed, you understand? And if we go back to the Kiddush metaphor, okay? And the Kiddush is only a metaphor. The Kiddush is not important. I didn't say they should have no sugar, no salt, kichalach, and one piece of herring per person, you understand? We're talking about going back to some sort of normalcy which people could live within in a modern world. So of course you have to be attentive to what your kids need. And yet, no, you can't bring up your kids in a standard of gashmias detached from the society around them in an extreme way. You could limit them, you could model it, you could make boundaries without question, okay? To go in a drastic gap. So then, like many of the people keep sending messages over here, go to Milwaukee, go to Cincinnati, go to Cleveland, go to places which are living on those standards. For sure, there's no question. That's a no-brainer that a person can't bring up their children in a dramatically different way than the society that's around them. That's not what we were talking about tonight. I want to stress that to you, Rabbi Parnas. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about, as a society, what type of message are we sending to our kids about whether this world is a prosdor or not, and what defines our self-value? On the specific issue, of course, a person has to take into account what's going on around them, okay? But as I'm talking to a klal here, not to a prat. Now, in that craziness and lack of boundaries, we have the ability to make boundaries. No, you're 100% correct. You can't completely detach your family from what's going on around them. That's a recipe for disaster.
There's another question that came in, and I don't know if you're ever eloquent, if you could pass on it, and it's a tough question, but a question that came in is that it's true that maybe I, as a family, or we, right, but in general, you can't change what most people are going to do, it's A, and B, there is a general society from people, whether a guy has money, where he does get a pass, and even his children get a pass because he has money. That means he gets more, I don't want to use the word coveted, a more lack of, he could be because he has money, he has a right to act a certain way or be more hefker, and he's getting the respect and getting the honors because of money. So it's showing that, oh, if this guy has money, he gets honored by the yeshiva. So it's not just the people, it's also some of the, I don't want to use the word moistas or whatever, that they honor that more, and it does show that to the kids.
You know, this question was asked at a good convention a couple of years ago when I sat with my Rebbe Yibruni on a panel there. It really depends what type of message you're sending at your Shabbos table. The yeshivas are allowed to express hakarat hatov to somebody who's a philanthropist who donates money to the yeshiva, okay? And not only they're allowed to express hakarat hatov, they're chayav to express hakarat hatov. Now, if for some people hakarat hatov is by giving them kavod, okay, seder, so that's the way of expressing them hakarat hatov. I don't think that if we sit at our collective Shabbos tables as a society, okay, we have to belittle that. The real question is, what message are we as parents, which is what our gathering about us tonight, are we radiating to our children, okay, of, oh, that's really chashuv or hakaras hatayv? There's a very fine line between the two things. I can give over to my children that at dinner X, Pliny Gvir was honored, rightfully so, because he helped the Maisid and he's helping Taira, and he deserves hakaras hatayv because he gave of himself and his financial ability. But does that mean that in our house, that's the goal and that's something which is an end for itself? Okay, fine, he gave. The kids pick up, by the way, on their very, very sensitive antennas, what we are machshev and what we really look. That means if we really respect the gvir because he's a gvir and he can allow himself a lifestyle, the kids are going to pick it up. And if we respect the gvir because he gave tzedakah and he's doing what HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him to do, but we're not jealous of his lifestyle and we don't say, wow, the kids pick that up also. The kids pick up the most sensitive calibrations of these things. So the etzem zach that yeshivas give kovid to people who give money itself is something very explainable to kids. It's not a contradiction to anything I said. The person gets kovid because they did something good. Where we get into trouble is when, as a society, we aspire to live the lifestyle, and there's no question about it that those in our community who have the financial means, who have caused a breach in the fundamental standards of living, are also litin es adin. There's no shal about it. In other words, if you want to live on an island and live on a standard that's above everybody else's head around you, bevakasha, that's your personal problem vis-a-vis HaKadosh Baruch Hu and your avodas Hashem. But if you live in a community and you go ahead irresponsibly and raise the standard of living in a tangible way, okay? So you have a responsibility. You have an achrayis if you're a person of means. And every person has to think about both the effect that it has on his children and on the society around us. If collectively we would be able to join together and be more responsible in that area, both those who have and those who don't have, we'd be a lot happier people, both ourselves and our children, and we wouldn't need to probably speak about next week's topic.
Okay, we have some live questions, Rabbi Elopin. Let's take some live ones, okay?
Please.
Okay, you're on.
Okay, hi. Thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate the straight talk. I wanted to ask like this. What happens when there's a discrepancy between the boundaries, the school setting, and that the parent believes? And I'm not asking this in the typical way of like the rules. What I'm asking about is a situation where a child misbehaves and is kicked out of class and the school puts it back in the parent's court. Like, you come up with a solution, otherwise your child can't go back to class. And in the meantime, I think that my child is manipulating because this kid doesn't want to go to English. So now he misbehaves and he's kicked out of English. And I think it's not a chinuch way of approaching things. Like, what do you do in such a situation?
It's a situation which, if I apologize, it's not a situation for a general answer. I don't have the answers to most kind of questions. I don't claim to, but this particular question, by the way, doesn't have a general answer. And I think that the type of framework that we're in now is a framework of generalizations of setting down parameters as a society. The particular question that you're asking has many, many, many variables to it, the child and the school and the parents. And I think I would be remiss in saying anything about the topic. It's not a topic that has rules. Okay, it's not a topic. First of all, I'm not an expert in anything, but I'm certainly, you know, not an expert in particular question you're asking. But I do want to point out that it's not a topic which is appropriate to rules. Every child is different. Every situation is different. There are situations which you described which call for a parent doing X, and there are situations that you describe which just calls for the opposite. I think I'd be remiss in answering such a question because I don't think it applies to any set of rules, Bichlal. And you know, the personal situation that you're describing, obviously, I don't know. So I apologize.
Well, yeah. I want to go back to the question that I asked before about, you know, the boy in the class, which a lot of the boys in the class are living it up or have that type of lifestyle. So he maybe doesn't, not all the boys in the class, but the friends that he's friends with are that type. He resonates to those boys. So now when he comes to you with, listen, all my friends, my chevra, are all doing this, or they're all spending $500 on a Segway, or they're all going on a trip and I want to go with them, and you don't feel it's within reason and it's out of control, what are you supposed to tell the kid?
There isn't that much to tell the kid, by the way. Okay. First of all, you're extremely handicapped if you're living in such a society, by the way. Okay. In other words,
we are.
One second. No, I don't mean you are handicapped personally. I meant that the parent who's asking this question is extremely limited within that limitation. That means because of the situation that you described. So the parent can say no substantially less than a situation where there wouldn't be those friends. There's no question about it. The answer to your question is that yes, the situation that you're describing handicaps and limits the level of boundaries that the parents can make. Despite that, I believe and I'm confident that in the appropriate circumstances, it's not all or nothing. What's critical in this topic that you said is that it's not all or nothing. There's no question about it that as a society, we need to change. On a personal level, you're correct that being in such a society limits the amount of no's and boundaries that a person can make, but it's not all or nothing. And again, depending on the depth of connection and what we're able to supplement the kids about, we are able to make boundaries. It's critical to make some boundaries. You're correct that the scenario you're describing doesn't allow for the depth of boundaries that I'm talking about, okay? It doesn't. But it does allow for some boundaries, which is critical for the particular topics that we spoke about tonight.
Okay, let's go to another live question. Okay, you're on.
Question. There's a very disturbing trend right now where a bunch of boys rent a car and they go across town for like 9-10 hours and then they settle in like Myrtle Beach or wherever it is. Then they rent a house. You know, let's say there's 8 or 9 boys. They leave Monday after Shacharis because they don't need Sefer Torah. And generally they don't return till Thursday. Happens to be this week they all went and they were, you know, they wanted my son to go. I said, absolutely not. I don't believe that it's safe, you know, for children, 19 and 18 year olds and 20 year olds to go driving 10 hours in the dark to get somewhere. And this, it happens to be that I asked my Rav of Blazer Ginsburg and he said, absolutely, if this is not a normal thing. And the Satan got even the best of Bachman to start traveling, you know, out for many hours, for days at a time. And it happens to be they didn't even return till Friday, 4:40. They came home 4:40 after they left Monday, right after Shacharis. I just want to know, how do we stop such a trend amongst our Bachrim that they all think it's normal? My son said to me, he said, Ma, you know what? You just don't understand Bachrim. Bachrim need to do this. It's a good outlet for them. And I'm trying to understand how they're all children. There's not an adult there. Renting a car, eating food, barbecuing in middle of wherever they are. I mean, the whole thing to me just sounds, and this is what everyone thinks is normal right now. And I'm against 15 mothers who let their kids go with no problem. And I just want to know, like, what do I tell my son when he looks at me like, Ma, you just don't understand us. And I think it's crazy to send. I said, not only that, I said, you're in yeshiva the whole month. You come on one Shabbos out of the month. And here I finally have you home till Bein Azman. And we have a good, you know, almost week with you. And you want me to send you now for another 5 days out in the wilderness with a bunch of boys? Where did this come from?
I'm not an anthropologist. I agree with every word you said. So I agree with every word you said, except for the fact that until there's going to be a change, the example you gave is a good example of something which is fundamentally a positive thing, which is Bachur going away for a day or two, Bein Azman, right? Into the excess they see. You see, the example that you took is a classic example of something which is fundamentally in the nucleus could be okay, a day or two a kid goes away, or for a day trip. Okay, I'm not talking about the old Pirkei trips, which went off at 8 o'clock and had everybody back by 5, because by 6 o'clock already the parents were saying Tehillim. But I'm not talking about that, okay? But this is a typical example of what I'm speaking about today, that everything's gone through the roof and everything's out of control. Like one of the people just sent in a message. It depends. In certain circumstances, you have the ability to say no. In most circumstances, because by the time, see, I don't have a pressure tonight to fix all of the problems of society. So I don't have the pressure to answer you. You're describing a typical example of something which is fundamentally in the nucleus okay, and then it's been multiplied exponentially to get out of control. The idea of a child taking a trip menazman for a day or so is 100% fine. And what you described is an excess. Now, the problem is that if we bring up our children, and this is what one of the people just sent in now, if we bring in up our children, that we never have a say in their lives. So of course, by the time the kid is 18, 19, you don't have a say, Bechlal. He didn't ask you whether he's going, he told you, okay? And the idea of tonight's gathering would be to try to, and maybe if I'm wrong, to take back the thing, to take back the clock a little bit and get to a situation where you can tell your kid, sure, you can go, but for 2 days, not for 5 days. And like you said, it's ben hazmanim. There's no reason why 25 to 30% of the ben hazmanim, you shouldn't be home. It's unacceptable to me. So the answer again to this question is, let's break the all or nothing equation. The all or nothing equation is killing us. Let's tell the kid, sure, you can go away for 2 days, but not for 5 days, because 5 days out of a ben hazmanim, which includes nothing, means that the kid's not home for ben hazmanim. You're 100% correct. I don't think you could say no. Again, there are many boys, by the way, that you can't say no at all, because it's going to cause a bitterness and a rebellion. I want to stress that. If it's a child that it's going to cause a bitterness or a rebellion or anything of the sort, then you have to say yes, obviously. But we're talking about in the principle. The principle is, in general, I'm not talking about your specific son, because it could be that in every specific situation, it's different. And many times you have to say yes. I'm not giving practical guidance over here, okay? I want to make myself very clear. You shouldn't walk out and say, elephant says about, you can't go on road trips anymore, Ben Azman. That's not what I said. It depends on the child. But in principle, at age 19, we can't start to tell our kids no. If we can develop that warm, loving relationship that over the years, the kids get used to the fact that there's discipline and there's boundaries, then I believe that we can limit and bring back. You see, the response to what I'm describing over here is not to go back to the old days of 50 years ago where there was nothing. The response is to go back to boundaries. A boundary means that we give and we make a line. So of course the child can go away for a couple of days because that's what's accepted now. When we were growing up, it wasn't accepted, these road trips, by the way. It was no such thing. But if today is the accepted thing, okay, so let's bring it back to 24, 36 hours instead of 5 days. And that's really where the issue of boundaries come in. The issue of boundaries comes in means drawing a boundary somewhere in middle, and it's a difficult part. It's always a lot easier to say no. What do you mean these road trips? Stay home and play Monopoly with the kids. Okay, but the world has changed, and kids do need to go on these road trips because it's accepted. The boundary is, and again, because tonight I'm talking about not the disciplinary part of it, I'm talking about the Olam Hazeh part of it and the self-worth part of it. So a boundary means that, sure, go on a road trip because, yes, the world has changed, but the inability to harness it in and limit it from 5 days to 2 days is where the problem lies. It's not in the Etzem Zachazav. We're not going to turn back the clock. We're not going to go back to horse and wagon, okay? We're done with that. And we have to live with what there is today. And yes, the standards of recreation have unfortunately changed. And the standards of what's called a good time has unfortunately changed. And yes, the door is bored. So we're going to talk to the door, and we need to respond to that. We're not going to cancel road trips. The question is, do we have the ability to say, listen, like this Chasheva lady just said, it's Ben Azmanim. You weren't home a whole year. You want to go away for a day or two, beseder, but to go disappear for the whole week of Ben Azmanim is absurd. It's a lot easier to say you're not going, because then you just have to draw a line in the sand. The chachmah is to say you are going, but for 2 days. And that's reasonable. Again, it doesn't work for every kid, and I'm not giving personal advice. Every situation is different, but I want to get across the concept.
We have a tremendous amount of questions coming out, to let you know, so we can take a bunch more, okay? Okay, you're on.
Hi, I wanted to know, thank you very much for your words. They're very insightful and direct. Thank you. Without putting other people down, because obviously that would not be very beneficial, but how are you telling your children no when their neighbors are doing it or their classmates are doing something? How are you doing that in a way that you're not putting other people down?
So it's a good question, by the way. First of all, again, because there is no way technically possible to completely detach your kids from the world around them. I go back to the you can't bring up your kids because, let me say it the following way, because you can't bring up your kids five levels below their environment, okay, you can't, then change the environment and get out of there. Because you can't bring up your kids five levels below the environment, so if you want to bring up your kids different than their environment, I go back to the previous question. It's about putting in boundaries. It's not about, you can't dramatically bring up your kids different environment. You can make boundaries that other people don't make. And then you could say, this is our house. This is what we believe in. The ability to do that depends on what type of emotional state the children is and be'ikar how happy the house is. So I want to repeat what I just answered because she asked a very important question. It's very important, I'm going to repeat again, in this topic, not to get into the all or nothing thing. In other words, if we bring up kids in a neighborhood where the standard of living, for good or for bad, is X, Y, and Z, you can't bring up your kids dramatically different. But you could bring them up enough with boundaries to get across the messages that we're talking about tonight. Now, if you want to bring up your kids dramatically different, then you're going to have to give a very clear message that they're all schkotzim, and then you need to move neighborhoods because that's not a way to bring up a family. If you want to bring up your kids with boundaries, so in order to make boundaries, I don't have to be dramatically different from the world around me. In other words, if you want to bring up your kids dramatically different, then you have to move. If you want, because it's not possible to bring up your kids. That's something impossible. It's impossible to bring up your kids in a neighborhood where the standard of living is on a scale of 1 to 10 and 8, and you're bringing them up on a 2. And the kids have to ask, you know, permission to take an apple from the refrigerator once a week. It doesn't work that way. And those days are over, okay? They were over about 70 years ago. You could, however, make boundaries, which in a world without boundaries, we make boundaries because we believe in the things that I spoke about tonight. If you have the happy, loving, geschmacka house, you can get away with that without saying anything bad about the kids. The kids will pick up, this is what's important. It's really important to stress that a boundary doesn't mean that I am eradicating the topic. A boundary is a boundary in middle of the territory. And it's critical. The all or nothing thing really kills us on this topic. That's my answer to your question.
Oh yeah. Okay, let's go to the next live one. Okay, you're on.
Hi, Shalom, Rabbi. My question is, it sounds like an identity that Rabbi always talks about is very tied to boundaries. Two people get married and they're raising children. Maybe one of them grew up with boundaries, without boundaries, with an identity, without one. Is this something that parents have the latitude to find an identity to something that they...
He got muted.
He got muted. Hold on. One second.
Yeah, the co-host must have censored you.
It was such a good question, I had to stop it. Now go, start it, do it again.
Yosef, start again.
Okay, so two people get married and sometimes they have different identities, they have different hashkafas, and sometimes someone grew up without boundaries, without an identity. Are they allowed to, is this something that Hashem says two people get married, they together could go and discover an identity that they want to pass over to their children, to their children, or is this something that they have to go out to find or be miyayitz for?
Whatever works for them. I'll stress to you that they better find out an identity. Can you imagine having children growing up in a house of toyu vavoyu, like the Wild West, where tati's A and mommy's B? You know, you understand the confusion, and so whatever the people need to work things out. Some people are able to work it themselves. Some people are able to work it out with the hadrocha of a rov. In general, every family needs to have a rov, and every family needs to have a moira derech. That I think we spoke about it last time in passing. But one of the crucial factors of boundaries is having a family rov who is the higher authority of the house. Not because they're necessarily right. It's just part of the boundaries that are there. But the technicalities of how a person develops that sense of barometer of what's worth and not worth is something that has to be worked out. It's something which is your Yahar Vayah for Mamash.
Okay, you're on. Let's take another live question. Unmute, yeah. Hi. Hi.
Am I on?
Yes, you are.
Okay, sorry, I wasn't sure it was me. My question's like this. We have boundaries in the house. Now that a boy turns 18, 19, they sort of ask the Rebbe Rosh Yeshiva a shayla. And the Rebbe Rosh Yeshiva says, doesn't give a clear answer. And not only that, but they say most boys are doing this these days. I can't fight it. So how are the parents supposed to fight it if the Rebbe Rosh Yeshiva, both of them, are not giving a clear answer to the boy?
There isn't too much you can do. That's the truth. In other words, it's a different topic, by the way, which is not for tonight. And you're touching on a very important topic, which, by the way, happens to be a positive topic. Baruch Hashem, our kids have Rebbeim. And I'm the last person that thinks that Rebbeim are replacements for parents. The interaction and the interface between ourselves as parents and our children and the moistures that they're in and their relationships with the Rebbe and quote-unquote the competition with parents is a very interesting topic, by the way. It's not a clear topic to discuss. I think in general, I would use your question as a platform to saying that it's important and we should encourage our children to be close with their Rebbeim, because not every child wants to be close to parents and not every child has the emotional ability to do it. In the particular situation that you're describing, there isn't that much to do. In other words, what you're really asking is what happens if the boundaries of our house is not getting backing from a Rebbe and the child is under the jurisdiction of that Rebbe. I would generally follow the Rebbe, not because the Rebbe has more power than the parents or that's how it should be, but technically speaking, we want to bolster the authority of Rebbeim if a child has a Rebbe because it's a long-term asset for life. So even if you don't necessarily agree particularly with the advice that the Rebbe or the Rosh Hashiva gave at that moment, but the institution of a child having a Rebbe or a Rosh Hashiva to take into life, into marriage is so critical that I would even swallow things which are not exactly to your taste. Okay, we're not talking about anything dramatic or major, okay? In order to promote this thing. I'm answering a general answer to a specific question you're answering, but I would use your question as a platform and a springboard to tell parents to, yes, promote a child's relationship or listening to a Rebbe, even if you don't always 100% agree with it. It's a critical, critical, critical asset for a child long-term. Rebbe Asher, we'll take two more questions, and then we'll wrap it up.
Okay. 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 There's a question. Two people are texting, but I'm putting it together myself. A lot of people are saying, you know something, I hear what Rebbe's saying and I'm going to work on it. And the question really they're getting to is now that they did what they did, what could they do now to start the first sparks, to start the first steps to show the kid that it's like a zivus chet. Like, what do you do? Okay, we did the vacations, we spent the money, we showed a tremendous chashivas for it. Because we all did that, right? Hashem began with his album. But now, what could be the first step that we could do, A, for ourselves, and B, that we could show our kids that this is where we want to go to?
So the answer is, In all honesty, that since we're talking tonight, not about behavioral issues, I have to stress something. The question you just asked is mamish, maybe one of the most important questions of tonight, okay? Not taking away the importance of any of the other questions. I want you to repeat the question again, that I don't want you to hear it.
Questions like this, for the people.
I want to use this question as a platform to bring out something which is maybe the most important thing I'm going to say tonight. Go ahead.
Okay, so the question is, for the people that have lived this lifestyle of spending money on showing chashivas to Gashmi Slaylam Hazeh and instilling it in our kids because of our own, you know, mistakes. And now that we hear this and now that we see some of the tetzos of these kids get older and how they react and how you see our luxuries become our kids' necessities and their luxuries are on such a high level, what could be our first baby steps to first work on ourselves and B, to show our kids that we made a mistake, this is not a life we want to live and we want to live a more ruchnis tikkatoritic life.
So we'll work it backwards. The kids, because they love us so much and they're so connected to us emotionally and spiritually and physically, their sensors will pick up when there's a change by you. So there's no steps that you need to take. The kids know what's important to you. They know what you get angry about. They know what you strive for. They know what you're mocked for. They know what frustrates you. They know what's important to us as parents, okay? So that's A. So the minute that we, as parents, will make this, I don't want to use the word switch. It's a dramatic term. I'm not in favor of these terms. People in middle age don't switch overnight. You can flip out when you're 18, okay? Not when you're 45.
And even when midlife crisis.
You can call it a crisis if you want, but so there's a few things which I want to describe. One is the kids will pick up when you have crossed over this Rubicon. The kids know what's important to you or not. If you believe that this world is a prosdor, the kids will pick it up. If you don't, and you think that this world is the final stop, just the place you do mitzvahs, the kids will pick it up. There are no steps that a person takes. A person has to learn mussar. These are processes. Notice, if I was a faker in everything I said today, so I would start to give you steps to do. We live in this crazy world where people go to shmuzin, and the people who say shmuzin tell people what to do, do this and do that. It's not like that. It's a process about absorbing, like, what do we hear about? Learn mussar every day. Go take out the Soma of Rav Pinkas or Rabbi Yerucham. Go learn Mesillas Hasharim every day, even if you're 45. If you're embarrassed, nobody has to see, by the way. Right? Mesillas Hasharim, in his introduction, Mesillas Hasharim said that everybody looks at people who learn Musar as fools, as shaitim. I think it's one of the biggest rayas that he had Ruach HaKodesh, because it was Niskay and Bimaloya. Everybody who learns Musar, people look at them as fools and Harrys, or somebody sick in the family, or like Rav Asher said, midlife crisis, call it whatever you want. The children will pick up any change that a person has in their fundamental belief of what we're here for, but that fundamental belief doesn't begin with small steps. Begins with a fundamental change of a person sitting down, looking at his or her spouse in the eyes and say, like, what are we here for? What are we doing here? And that process is a process of growth. It's not going to be in one day. It's not going to be in 2 days. But the kids will pick up over time that somebody has rounded the corner over here, but it requires real work. If I wouldn't say that, these changes are not superficial cosmetic changes that are going to happen because of a small step, this or that. It's about making a deep fundamental change, and at least what we believe in before what we do, before lifestyle changes, okay? It's putting in the time. These are not things that a person can snap their fingers and say, oh, you know something? I became the Chafetz Chaim. This world's a world of corridor. I don't need anything. Throw out the furniture and burn the couches. And it doesn't work that way. Okay. These are deep, long processes. And as the process is real and it's deep and it's comprehensive, the kids will pick it up.
Okay. Well, we're going to go to, I believe, the last question. I'm divorced and my kids go back and forth between homes. I feel like whatever limit and guidelines I set for my children get completely undermined and messed up. They can get anything they want from the other house. And if I don't pay for something and buy what they want or what they need, then they go to the other side and get it from there. How do I help set my kids up for success and to be healthy adults as they grow up?
This is not a question for this framework, by the way. And the reason why I'm saying that is to give respect to the person who's asking it, is that he or she, I don't know who it is, who's asking the question, should not have a guilt trip and blame themselves for doing a bad job as a parent. Because the person who's asking the question is really in an impossible situation, A, and they should therefore give themselves the credit for doing the best they can. It's very important to understand that there are certain things that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam runs the world and puts out of our control. This is one of those examples. However, obviously, I don't need to say that if there would be a possibility of some sort of, family counseling with the other side, again, without the all or nothing imperative, that could dramatically improve things, okay? I'd also suggest that to get professional guidance of, despite the difficult situation, you probably could help in dealing with the situation, because again, it's not all or nothing, but this is not the type of question which I think is for this framework.
First, I want to give a gracious credit to Rabbi Elfin coming on tonight. Rabbi Elfin, you know that the Zoom max is at 1,000, so a lot of people couldn't come on tonight, so Hashem will send out the shir to everybody, and tremendous chizik, and we're getting tremendous feedback over here. Rabbi Elfin, they want to know, when's the next day? When are you coming back again? Next Sunday night? What works for you?
Rabbi Kalish is next week.
Come on together. Okay, and again, Rabbi Elfin just said, next week, Hashem, we have Rabbi Daniel Kalish coming from Waterbury Yeshiva, is discussing just love them, like the book, just love them. Really, really giving tremendous chizik for parents, and really seeing as the parent told me, Rabbi Kalish only sees the neshama of a child. He doesn't see the child. The child, he only sees the neshama. It's a gracious chizik to have next week. It should be a tremendous program. Again, everything is recorded. It'll be on menachembernfeld.com. Any questions, please email coachmenachem@gmail.com. We'll obviously send everything to Rabbi Elfin. And again, tonight's shir 49. It's all pre-recorded. You can call tomorrow the number to hear it. The number is 848-777-GROW. Again, to the Lakewood Scoop, Rabbi Yaniv Chazak, Chayla Kaufman, Shmuel Sommer from JCN. Rabbi Nachman, you want to give a few closing words? I don't know if Rabbi Elfin, do you want to say a closing? Whatever, if you're up to it, whatever. After Nachman.
I want to say Shkoyach, Rabbi Elfin, and for putting down the foundation. And Baruch Hashem, there was a big oilam to hear it, so maybe we could start working on some boundaries in Kiddush and other things also. And anybody can reach out so we can start any program in any area. Just give me a, send me an email. I know many are a little bit upset because they want practical, and we live in a world that they only feel they can do something if you tell them to do A, B, and C. And which tonight we heard that, you know, every situation is different, and it's more the Yesoidus. And there's a lot of different aspects, like we heard, Shalom Bayis, the Simcha, relationship. You're talking about big things. And again, it's not all or nothing. The first step you should do is take that small baby step. And that's basically what it is. Nobody could tell you what it is, because I believe everybody would know what they can do to start that, and hopefully the kids pick it up. And if it's Hashem, we should feel, we should see a change, and we should be zoicha emetz Hashem to the geula with all of these kirves Hashem emetz Hashem.
Rabbi Elton, do you want to say anything for the ilum?
I would just end off the way I started. I think it's an incredible kiddush Hashem that so many people gathered together to try to improve the quality of our family life, the quality of our ruchnius life. That's chus, we should all be gebenched, and the Rebbein Shem should send all of us, everybody in their Yeshua, Befrada, Beklal, because at the end of the day, this gathering is a fabulous, incredible Kiddush Hashem. The fact that people are willing to listen to things which are not so comfortable to hear. And at the end of the day, I always say that the silent majority of our tzibur, the vast silent majority, want to grow, want to do the right thing, want to go b'derech aviseinu. And it should, that alone should be a schus to have the siyata d'shmaya to do what we so much want to do and will do. Mirtz Hashem.
Okay, everybody, good night. We'll see you all next week. Same time, same place.